The following is a meeting with disciples with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami on January 14th, 1996 in Sri Vrindavan Dham.
This we're exclusively hearing on tape. But I certainly don't mean to minimize the act of sitting with a book and reading Prabhupada in the printed form. And he took so much trouble to prepare Srimad Bhagavatam and his other books. So, I wanted to give a little demonstration about how to improve reading and how to enter Prabhupada's books. It's based on a common experience for me of noticing myself not reading the way I want to, and then the corrective measure I can take. So I noticed that this morning, in a particular passage, and I'll turn to that passage now and try to recreate what happened. Maybe I can, maybe also you can share my experience. So without any other comments, I'm first going to read a passage. This is in the first canto, first chapter, text 2. Development of this consciousness leads at once to the stage of freedom from the threefold miseries. The threefold miseries are 1, in relation with the body and the mind; 2, in relation with our dealings with other living beings; and 3, in relation with the acts of providence on which we have no control. Srimad Bhagavat begins from the surrender of the living entity unto the Absolute Person, with clear consciousness of the devotee's oneness with the Absolute, and at the same time his eternal position of servitorship of the Lord. In the material conception of his life, he thinks himself falsely as the Lord of all he surveys, and therefore he is always troubled in the above-mentioned threefold miseries of life. But as soon as he comes to know his real position of transcendental servitude, at once he becomes freed from all the above-mentioned miseries. The servitorship position of the living being is wasted in the material conception of his life with a false sense of overlordship. This servitorship is transferred unto the Lord in pure consciousness of spiritual identity, and at once the living entity becomes freed from the encumbrances of material affliction. So I don't know how each of you did during that reading, how attentive you were to what I just read. I'm sure it varied. People were thinking of different things, other than what I read. Or you heard it on a certain level, not so deep. And some of you no doubt did hear. As Prabhupada says, of course, some of you may have reached that perfection in that lecture. And so I have to grant that some of you may have reached that perfection. So, but anyway, this morning I read it, and I realized that I had read it without any feeling or attention. So this is maybe due to different reasons. They may be, who knows, it may be physical, it may be lack of vitamin B12, or the glucose level suddenly drops in your body. It may also be due to what we call familiarity breeds contempt. So in terms of Prabhupada, he uses so many phrases, not just words, but several words together, you know, the shackles, clutches of material nature, threefold miseries. And when you put together one of them after another, frequently, it's like you feel you've heard the whole thing before. And if you're not careful and awake, it just kind of lulls you to sleep because of familiarity breeds contempt. Therefore, it's just the opposite, that because you're so familiar, you have to be very alert. If you're very alert, then that needn't happen. So as I say, the worst kind of inattention would be that if I ask you, what was the meaning of what I read, you'd have to say, I'm sorry, I missed that, I wasn't paying attention. Why not? Well, when I read it, what did you think of? Try to remember. Well, you started out reading, and then I was worrying about my child if she's out there in the front yard, if she's going to get hurt, or I had this indigestion and I started meditating on my stomach. This and that. If you can recall at all, what you may say, I don't remember anything. Spaced out. So then but then someone else would be able to make some little summary. They call this reading comprehension. I can remember vaguely various intelligence tests. You remember in school when you had these tests for your intelligence? And there's always different sections. Some sections would be mathematics and science, and I always have trouble with those. And I was always happy to see that a large amount was taken up with reading comprehension. They considered that important. And I found that I could do that better. So basically you read something, and then with a very little, a preparation or a rereading, you're asked, what was the meaning of what you said? And for intelligence tests, all you have to do is regurgitate basically what it said. So that would be, in case of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Prabhupada's book, if you can do that, that's good. Certainly, because, then you're bringing through your mind all this highly refined transcendental knowledge and fixing your mind on it and your intelligence on it. So in this case of this part of a paragraph, he's saying that we are suffering from the threefold miseries. He describes what they are. and this is because of a material conception of life in which we think that we are the Lord, or the enjoyer. And as we try to carry this out, therefore, that's how we get inflicted by the three modes of material nature, or the threefold misery. If we take the position of the servant of the Lord, then we get free of the miseries. And that's basically what he's saying. But that's certainly not the last word. That's hardly the beginning of reading. And there are more stages, and it's a little difficult for me to describe. I don't want to be pretentious about it, but what comes further is hard to describe. But I can say that you can go more further and further into Prabhupada's books, and you can see Krishna. You can start getting a taste that this is wonderful. I'm actually getting realization of these transcendental knowledge, which is not an ordinary thing. It's not what they know about in intelligence testing and reading comprehension and so on. It's comprehension of Krishna, transcendental subject matter, of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I can explain it this way, that and this is a partial view of a Prabhupada Nuga, a subjective view, that I find it's available only in Prabhupada's books. That he has this ability to do this to our hearts because of our submissive hearing from him and the potency of what he delivers. They both have to be there. Like with the potent man and the potent woman is a conception of a child. We could say this is an elementary instruction in Krishna consciousness. The living being in the grips of the miseries if he becomes a servant of the Lord. There's higher and higher description in Krishna consciousness about, pure bhakti, the activities of bhakti, then the goal, payojana, and the activities of Krishna in Krishna Loka, and within that, the activities of Krishna, the gopis of Krishna, Radharani, Radhakund, and so on. But if you hear those things from a source well, to put it bluntly, other than Prabhupada, does it really enter your heart? To give an extreme, easy example to prove, say you read about Krishna and Radharani having an intimate exchange written by a professor in a university who specializes in Braj. So It would be the topmost description, but it could not work on you at all, because he's a non-devotee. And so when Prabhupada, when he describes anything, you can get, it can take your heart to Krishna, and then Krishna, he does the rest once you're with Krishna. So this is possible. And it's latent in everything he says, the whole philosophy is latent by bringing you direct contact with Krishna. So anyway, I read it again, the second time, and, beyond this, I went beyond not knowing what I had read, but I also went beyond just the comprehension of it, making a summary study of what I read, to this feeling at least that, everything is here in these books, and if I can only do this, slow down and read. I've been recently reading aloud. It's a nice practice to myself to help the attention, and not trying to read so much at once. And so I was able to travel a great deal from the first reading to the second reading. So just for fun, let me read it again and see how far we can go, how each of us can go. Development of this consciousness leads one at once to the stage of freedom from the threefold miseries. The threefold miseries are: 1, in relation with the body and the mind; 2, in relation with our dealings with other living beings; and 3, in relation with the acts of providence over which we have no control. Srimad Bhagavatam begins from the surrender of the living entity unto the absolute person, with clear consciousness of the devotee's oneness with the absolute, and at the same time, his eternal position of servitorship of the Lord. In the material conception of life, he thinks himself falsely as the Lord of all he surveys, and therefore he's always troubled in the above-mentioned threefold miseries of life. But as soon as he comes to know his real position of transcendental servitude, at once he becomes freed from all the above-mentioned miseries. This servitorship position of the living being is wasted in the material conception of life with a false sense of overlordship. This servitorship is transferred unto the Lord in pure consciousness of spiritual identity, and at once the living entity becomes freed from the encumbrances of material affliction. So, we can become free of all suffering. I mentioned in the beginning that instead of paying attention, we might have been thinking of different sufferings we have. But here's the answer to the suffering. And we can't hear it. And here's the loving relationship that we're hankering for. We're thinking of this person, that person, and the most lovable person is available, Krishna. To punctuate this, I have a brief tape excerpt of Prabhupada talking at the end of it. A lecture he gave in Vrindavan. Asking us to make the effort to study, to read, to hear.
But that is the life's mission, as far as possible, try to understand as advice by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Siddhanta valiya chitte na karo Lord. Don't be lazy. Always try to understand Krishna by Vedic conclusion, not by manufacturing ideas. Siddhanta, don't be lazy. That is instruction of Kaviraj. Siddhanta baliya chitte nakara halor. Ya haite Krishna lage sudhiraman. If you study according to the Vedic conclusion, don't manufacture ideas and whims and sentiments. If you go through Siddhanta, then you will be more and more firmly fixed up. Yahaite Krishna lage sudhiraman. Then your life is successful. Thank you very much.
So that's reading and not chanting. These go so well together. Sometimes we read and then we chant. Even physically, psychologically, it uses different parts of the body in different facilities. You may get a little tired sitting in one position with the light on the page and your eyes reading the page, a lot of brain work of a certain kind, and then you stop and you just utter Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and hear. So it's a nice variety. So we all know it's also a struggle to chant properly. So I'm turning to a section of this compilation, Namamrita. Three different categories under the category of how to develop offense-less chanting. That's what we want to do. So the first advice is, repeated chanting brings one to the stage of offense-less chanting. Prabhupada says, even if in the beginning one chants the Hare Krishna mantra with offenses, one will become free from such offenses by chanting again and again. So that's one strategy offered by the acharyas and Srila Prabhupada. Simple enough. Make an all-out assault on this bad chanting by getting into it and chanting more and more. Even if you have no comprehension yet of how to improve a given mantra, do it. Don't shy away from it because you're not doing what Prabhupada said about the reading. Don't be lazy. Strategy number one for tonight. Number two, to become free from offenses to the holy name, one must continue to chant constantly and also humbly offer prayers in glorification of the holy name. So it's not only just throwing yourself into it with repetitions of the name, but something else called prayer. And in this passage, the prayer has to do with regret for the fact that our chanting is offensive. And we realize that in this, in a personal way, or we approach it in a personal way, that we, as persons, have offended Nama Prabhu. We've offended the holy name. We have been, continue to. And so we ask forgiveness. The chanting of the holy name makes one offenseless. In the book Namakamudi, it is recommended that if one is an offender at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, he should submit to that Vaishnava and be excused. Similarly, if one is an offender in chanting the holy names, he should submit to the holy name and thus be freed from his offenses. One should be very humble and meek to offer one's desires and chant prayers composed in glorification of the holy name, such as, he gives three different shlokas. One should chant such prayers to become free from offenses at the lotus feet of the holy name. It is not mentioned here, but also nice is Shikshastakam prayers. Good to accompany the holy name. Especially Trinada Peace and Ichena. Krishna's Kaviraj said you should take that as a thread to the garland of the holy name. So, strategy number two. Tonight. We can keep these in mind and employ them all tomorrow morning. Next, by developing one's service attitude toward the Lord, one can come to chant without offense. We mentioned last night, the third offense in chanting is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. So, one may envision some defiance, disobedience of the order of the spiritual master, but also more subtly, if you're not interested in service to the spiritual master, but you go to chant dutifully, that your chanting cannot be as effective as it can be when you get the mercy for coming forward to carry out the order and the mission, the spirit and the letter that was given by the spiritual master. Prabhupada said, it's not enough to sit tight, if you use that expression, just to sit tight and chant, but we have to do our prescribed service, and that helps. He says, one should be encouraged to develop his service attitude toward the Lord, because this will help him to chant without any offense. And so, under the guidance of a spiritual master, the disciple is trained simultaneously to render service and at the same time to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. As soon as one develops his spontaneous service attitude, he can immediately understand the transcendental nature of the holy names of the Maha Mantra. So, review. What was the first method for developing offenseless chanting that I mentioned from Raisa here? Gimnagya? Yeah, repeated more chanting. And number two? And ladies, bye. Humbly offer prayers to the lotus feet of the holy name. And three, one, yeah, service attitude. So, chant together. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare. Hare Krishna. There was another category about chanting. The holy name cannot be chanted offenselessly by one who is not pure. So, I was speaking last night in the initiation lecture about the vows to follow the four rules, and I said, especially illicit sex. Not that the others aren't equally important, but and some of us may have been deeply into intoxication, and meat eating was just done as second nature, and gambling. But somehow, these abominable habits we could throw over more easily. So, I emphasize that all disciples should be true to their vows about all these things. And I don't wish to go into details about it, but we cannot prosecute our activities nicely if we don't follow these instructions, and we'll be hampered very seriously. I was hearing Prabhupada talking today about in Vrindavan. Someone lives in Vrindavan and he commits aparad. And Prabhupada was talking. He also said he didn't wish to discuss it, but he knows all about Vrindavan, what actually goes on in the houses and the lanes and everything. What's behind the sadhu's clothes and heart from living here. And so he said that there's a lot of illicit sex actually goes on. even they call it gopis' love. He said that they take Krishna's activities as support for their debauchery. He said, I've even seen, he said, they will speak of some debauch and say, yes, he's like Krishna. That he has girlfriends and everything. So then he said, if somebody does this in Vrindavan, then he gets punished in his next life to become a hog, a dog, a monkey. He said, otherwise, what's the explanation for all these animals in Vrindavan? This is a mercy on him, Prabhupada said, from Radharani, that he's then punished in one life with the great inconvenience of having to be an animal like that, in so many suffering conditions as we see they have. But the animals, they don't incur more sin. They're just limited in that way. That's the man's prerogative. So they suffer, and they don't commit more sins. And then, next life, they go back to Godhead. That's special for Vrindavan. But Vrindavan has special potency for advancement, and you get especially punished also. So he said it's a very grave offense. But it's not only a grave offense in the Dham, but anywhere to take these vows and then to commit offenses, to disobey. And to indulge in it. So we have to take this out of our life, or it can create serious impediments. And it's a real cheating propensity. We have a cheating propensity. But we're not getting away with it. We're going to be punished. We are being punished. And why should we undergo such punishment and that being deterred? For what? For a little flickering happiness that is illusory, ultimately. And only when we do that, remove that vishayi, sense gratification, then we can actually taste the spiritual happiness, chanting, serving, and so on. So I wanted to underline it, emphasize it, and leave it up to you, an honor system. So please take care of your own situation for your own benefit. Anyone have any questions?
Sometimes maybe to get some little glimpse of how I have to become a beggar for some understanding of the chanting. But then, like every now, people myself, I get so much of the distractions that I think I'm not a beggar at all when I'm chanting. I've got chanting and I see this person, and, you know, so many different things happen. But I'm supposed to be chanting and being an actual just in these paths, nothing is what's happening. Have you done any more techniques?
Well, that's certainly a good more techniques for what? The idea of being a beggar is good and true. We have to, Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur expresses it, and Prabhupada says we have to become like a follower of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and beg for the holy name. Beg Krishna, please let us actually chant. Stop the mind from other activities. Yeah, there are many things and many things to do. As I said, it's not just like a meditation technique, but it's a life, a way of life where you don't have a, when you go to chant, you don't have a lot of agitating things on your mind. And that like in health they call the holistic approach, you know, rather than just take some medicine, you have to have your whole life has to be well balanced. So it's like that with chanting. It's like the whole thing comes together. If you're spending too much time worrying about making money or competing and all things like that that aren't a life of Krishna consciousness, then the essential Krishna conscious activity of chanting cannot flourish. But as far as in the actual hours of chanting, you can't stop the mind, you know. It doesn't stop, just like Prabhupada's little son didn't stop activity for a moment. But it goes to different places. And we have to fight that tendency of bringing our wayward mind back again to chanting. So I think the chanting should be a very uninterrupted, externally peaceful situation as much as possible to aid that concentration. And it's like, all right, clear the decks. Now I'm going to chant japa. You know, put everything else away, and you sit down in your favorite place for it. It's good to have a routine where you sit and everything. You may have an altar and a place to sit before the altar, and just make everything ready for the act of the chanting. And then you can at least be aware of what you're doing, that now I'm trying to chant and I'm trying to deal with my mind which goes away from the chanting. I'm trying to beg the chanting. Have some, as you enter it, have some awareness of the wonder and the sweetness of this act that you're going to do, but also the struggle that's going to be involved, and just be eager to do it as a good chanter, as one who's trying again in another Brahma Muhurta hour auspiciously. It's always auspicious. We're running out of time. We'll take this one more. Honey, would you?
By not following the rules and regulations, you've got themselves entangled with vain and the falsification. This is how the standards are gain progress. You're talking about the other, the rules you've made about it. And that caught my attention because I thought by getting entangled with vain and the falsification, you're not following the rules.
Mm-hmm. Would you read it again?
By not following the rules and regulations, you've got themselves entangled with vain and the falsification.
But the rules are not to, yeah. Maybe it needs some editing, huh? Yeah, well, I have to see the whole context of it. But you're asking an editing question, whether I said it clearly or not. Or you're asking, did I have a hidden meaning in mind? I'd have to look at it. But to take intoxication and to get entangled with women for enjoyment, that is the disobedience of the rules and regulations. So if you disobey, you could say the meaning is if you disobey and start that, then you'll just get into it more and more, and that'll be the result. There are rules. So they say, okay, we got to follow the rules because we follow rules. Well, what are the rules? Well, these are. If you don't follow the rules, what will happen? This is what will happen. This is the substance of the misbehavior. It's spelled out in the second part of the statement. So we should just obey the rules. These are the rules. I want to make an announcement that after this meeting, the devotees who are organizing the printing of some of my books in India and arranging for distribution at the Mayapur World Convention. They want to hold a meeting. And so I would encourage everyone to stay. Also, after that meeting, our host, Sarangi Prabhu, is going to serve some prasadam. I'm grateful to these devotees who recently got together here, especially Baladev, Rupa Raghunath, Chaitanya Chandra Doya, and also newly initiated Vishwambar, and others. Even before they were here, I was announcing, and this group was smaller, that if anyone is going to Mayapur for the festival, please consider helping us by taking a little time to selling some books at a book table. Chaitanya Chandra Doya will arrange, because it's my interest. But now it's becoming ambitious and well organized. And so at least attend the meeting and hear with the, how they're asking for help and bringing books and selling books. This is a tremendous opportunity, as Lokanath Maharaj says, centennial, once in a lifetime. And in terms of my being able to distribute the books, which is my service, it's a great opportunity. Every year, even without much organization, but with dedication of Vishwambar Das, we would sell books at Mayapur nicely. I see the distribution of my books, it's not like a mass thing where you go on the street and you approach people. And it's not that every devotee in ISKCON is interested. But I know that there are people all over the world, here and there, here and there, here and there, who get helped very much and are very interested in them. And in many cases, the books aren't available to them at those various places where they are. And I always wonder how I can reach them by some network. But this is the one event in the year that I know I can reach them. They come from Eastern Europe, they come from Russia, and so many places. And that they can see books that they never knew of. So, and this year is many times more than the usual festival. They're anticipating 2,000 or 3,000 devotees there. For the centennial. So we're emphasizing for this purpose the books that I've written directly on Srila Prabhupada. It's not like my trip at Satsarupa Maharaj's books. No, we're not even advertising that aspect or using my name just as much, though they're on the books. But they're been preparing these books for many years, long before the centennial campaign built up. So there's quite a list of books that any devotee in ISKCON can enjoy and find profitable about Prabhupada directly, starting with Prabhupada Lilamrita and others. So we're trying to make those books available. And so these devotees who are working to get the books available, they want to ask for your cooperation. So at least if you can, stay and hear from them. So am I not going to distribute because it's going to be...